Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Corporations, in the opinion of some, have taken control of the national government in a way that promotes and ensures the corporate interest at the expense of the rights and interests of the average citizen. Arianna Huffington is the author of a new book entitled Pigs at the Trough: How Corporate Greed and Political Corruption Are Undermining America. Her book discusses alliances between corporate executive officers, politicians, lobbyists, and bankers in disregard for the rights of office and factory workers and the average citizen. Huffington, a political columnist and commentator with a conservative Republican background, supports a populist control of government that protects the rights of the individual over the rights of the corporations. When I spoke with Arianna Huffington when she was in San Francisco, California on February 11, 2003, we began our conversation when I asked her to tell us about the historical backgrounds of corporate greed.
Well, first of all, obviously, greed has been part of human nature forever, and we've had the great historic explosions of greed with the robber barons. And what is different now is that there's a collusion between Washington and corporate America, which is unprecedented. The degree to which it has been institutionalized, the amount of lobbyists in Washington, 20,000 registered lobbyists, basically working day and night to promote the interests of the clients and in the process undermine the public interest. So what I'm arguing in the book is that even when reforms are passed with great fanfare, as happened with the Sarbanes-Oxley bill that the president signed into law, even though he didn't really want to because of the public outcry, behind the scenes, as soon as the reforms are passed, they begin to be undermined. And we've seen that with what's happening at the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, where Harvey Peet, even though he resigned in disgrace 3 months ago, is still there, leading the undermining, the killing of reforms or the watering down of reforms, including a very fundamental reform that had to do with the conflict of interest with accountants being both auditors and consultants and tax advisors to the same company and the same executives.
Well, are you proposing a way out of this mess?
Yes, I am proposing a way out of this mess. It has to do with what we the people do. Basically, the first thing I'm proposing is to stop looking to a knight on a white charger coming out of Washington to save us, to get really informed about what's happening and about all the ways in which we're being screwed.
Well, you're talking about informing the high school students in American government classes, beginning there?
Well, I'm also talking about informing students, both high school and college students, and all of us about what's happening right now. Because when you put all the pieces of the puzzle together, it's very hard not to get really mad. And then the question is, once we are mad, to be determined to get even and not to settle for this hijacking of our democracy.
Well, if you're talking about the corporate control and we look at television, what is your approach of challenging what they present the viewer, whether it's on television or radio?
Well, I think what's happened with the media has a lot to do with the media's attention deficit disorder. I mean, it's as if the media can only handle one story at a time. I mean, now we are obsessed with Iraq, and it sort of consumes a lot of the oxygen that should also be going to a lot of other important stories, especially the story of what's happening in our economy. So that's one of the main problems that I see with the media. Remember, we had our obsession with Kosovo or Elian Gonzalez or a lot more trivial stories that they may be tragic for the people to whom they happened, like Jean-Benet Ramsey or Gary Condit, but did they need to obsess a nation?
Well, I understand what you're saying, but my question deals more with the corporate control of the media. And in Pigs at the Trough, you talk about the corporate control of government, but those are the same corporations that control the media that have a great deal of influence on the thought mechanisms of the average American citizen. How do you propose to deal with that?
Well, there is no question that the conglomerization of the media, which is a thing you're getting at, Barry, has influenced the kind of programming we see.
What's your position then on economic boycotts of these corporations that affect the programming, that control the lobbyists?
Well, I actually write in the book about economic boycotts as just one of the ways in which we can influence what is happening. I am all in favor of all these tactics and many more, whether ranging from the more conventional tactics of sending emails and writing letters and making phone calls to our elected representatives or to the offices, the headquarters of corporate America, if we're trying to influence Detroit, for example, the three automakers, if we're trying to influence the drug industry, their headquarters. But beyond that, I believe that boycotting, taking to the streets, demonstrating, all these are vital tools in taking back our democracy. And they've worked in the past. I mean, there's a noble tradition in this country of demonstrations, protests, leading to fundamental social reform. In fact, if you think about it, that's what I'm arguing in the book, the major social movements in this country, the civil rights movement, the women's movement, or the movement to end the war in Vietnam, were not initiated by politicians in Washington. They were initiated by often young people deciding enough is enough and they're not going to take it anymore. The civil rights movement in many ways was started in Greensboro when some young people decided to sit down at lunch counters.
And wouldn't leave when they weren't served.
Exactly.
Then what would be your vision of America? How would you shape and coalesce the 280 million of us that live in this country?
Well, I have a sidebar in the book, which, as you know, is full of sidebars, that I call Upstairs, Downstairs. And this is the dysfunctional picture of today's America, where we have become two nations, the elites upstairs that are not just living under different rules and laws, and I'll explain what I mean by that, but are also operating on a different scale of wealth and privilege. And there's always been the American dream that if you do well for your company, your shareholders, your workers, your community, you should also be able to do incredibly well for yourself. That's always been part of the American dream. But something very different has happened now, which is a disconnect between performance and reward. And a lot of those CEOs that I mentioned in Upstairs, Downstairs are actually doing incredibly well even though they've driven their companies into the ground. In fact, CEOs of 23 companies that ended up in different ways being driven into the ground made 70% more than the average CEO, which is unbelievable if you think of it. Even Ayn Rand would object to that. And at the same time, the most damning statistic in that sidebar is the fact that in 1980, the average CEO made 42 times as much as the average worker, and by the year 2000, the average CEO made 571 times as much as the average worker. So that's almost a feudal society, and if we're not there, we're headed there. And my vision is to bring these two Americas together so that we all operate under the same rules and laws, so people are not rewarded for defrauding the public of billions of dollars in shareholder wealth or billions of dollars in 401ks and savings, and where our policy priorities are dramatically different. I mean, it's absurd to look at the president's budget and see that his policy priority has to do with what's good for the upstairs America, ending taxation of dividends, for example.
Let's talk about corporations and how they come to be for a minute. As we know, they're a creature of the state. Most corporations in the United States are chartered by the state of Delaware, but any state can charter a corporation. What's your feeling about the state that charters a corporation revoking that corporate charter when the corporation has transgressed beyond a certain limit?
Oh, absolutely. I think there has to be a lot more, there have to be a lot more consequences for fraudulent behavior than there are now. Right now, for example, we have companies, including Halliburton, the company that Dick Cheney used to be CEO of, that were caught defrauding the government in terms of their billing. And they were fined, but then we went on giving them more government contracts. I mean, I would definitely insist that there is a kind of three strikes and you are out rule. And if companies are caught three times defrauding the government, they would get no more government contracts. Also, I would absolutely not give government contracts to any company that moved abroad, moved is in quote marks because they don't really move abroad. They open a P.O. box abroad to shelter their profits in places like Bermuda. Again, we had, just to go back to Halliburton, I mentioned Halliburton again because, after all, Dick Cheney, who together with the president are setting the policy, are both business people who are caught in a lot of these practices themselves. I mean, Halliburton, on Cheney's watch, went from having 9 tax haven subsidiaries to having 44, and therefore went from paying taxes to getting a tax rebate. So these are practices that I would absolutely make illegal. I personally believe that, and I say that in the book, in the list of reforms that I'm proposing at the end, that if you're an American company and you want to benefit from all the privileges and opportunities of being an American company, then you do not use tax shelters to avoid paying taxes to our government.
What's your feeling about term limits for elected officials?
Well, I'm in favor of term limits, but it doesn't really solve the problem. Because what's happening right now is that fundraising is dominating running for office. If you talk to politicians running for office, about 80% of their time is often devoted in fundraising. So that means that whether they stay there for a long time or a short time, they are beholden to corporate interests instead of being there to promote the public interest.
Well, also, you berate lobbyists to a great extent. And if we were to institute term limits, the institutional memory of what has gone on in the legislative process remains with the lobbyist as opposed to the elected official.
Yes, I understand this argument, but, you know, these lobbyists are often married to the elected officials, or they are their children. I mean, I have this sidebar, which actually is my favorite sidebar, on page 95 of the book called All in the Family, where I have a list of the lobbyists who are actually members of legislators' families. Linda Daschle, married to Tom Daschle, a powerful lobbyist for American Airlines, who was instrumental in the massive multi-billion dollar bailout of the airline industry immediately after September 11th, without any protections for workers, that basically did not prevent bankruptcies or massive layoffs. Clearly not in the public interest. Or Chet Lott, Trent Lott's son, who went from running a pizza joint to being a powerful Washington lobbyist, not the most obvious career transition, you would agree. And that should also be illegal. I mean, part of what I'm saying in the book, so then all, it's not just all the things that were done that were illegal. It's all the things that are legal that should be illegal. One of the, either Tom Daschle or Linda Daschle should give up their job. Either Trent Lott or Chet Lott should give up their job. I don't mind who, but trust me, if Linda Daschle wasn't married to Tom and Chet Lott wasn't the son of Trent, they would not be getting a lot of lobbying business.
That would seem to make sense. I'd like to take a moment and say that this week we're talking with Arianna Huffington, the author of a recent book called Pigs at the Trough, How Corporate Greed and Political Corruption Are Undermining America. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Ariana, do you have any broader goals?
You mean broader than changing America?
Right. Yes. Yes. Exactly.
So you want to change the world. Do you have any other broader goals?
Personal aspirations. Are you interested in elective office?
No. I'm not at all interested in elected office. I really feel that at the moment the system is so broken that the way to change it is not through elected office, for me at least.
And you were awfully close to elective office when your former husband was a congressman.
Yes, but I was never interested in running for office myself. I really believe that using my platform right now through my column, my books, my TV work, being on your show, doing my radio show every Friday, is a way to get the message out, to be one of the voices out there galvanizing people to get involved. And in the end, even though the book will definitely disgust you in terms of the amount of evidence that you have about all the ways in which the public is being hoodwinked and the public interest undermined, in the end, it's an optimistic book, because I really believe that there is nothing as powerful as people coming together to challenge the status quo. In the end, we're more powerful than anything. And I give a lot of evidence in a section I'm calling In Praise of Making Stink about how people win when they don't put up with what's happening. I mean, look at that. Henry Kissinger, the cover boy of cover-ups, is no longer chairing the truth-finding commission around September 11th. Trent Lott is no longer the majority leader. All those things and many, many others would not have happened if the public had not protested.
What's your position on the potential war against Iraq?
I am very much against the war on Iraq. I believe this administration has not made a case as to why Iraq presents a clear and present danger to this country. They've made a case that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, but so do many countries. So does North Korea, so does Pakistan. Many countries that could sell or give those weapons to terrorists, and that's the real threat we're facing. It's a very complex threat. It's from thousands of cells in dozens of countries, including in this country. And unfortunately, this president cannot handle complexity. So he's much more comfortable with reducing all those multiple threats down to one, Iraq, instead of the reality of this new world that we are in, where we are vulnerable in so many different ways that the greatest weapon we have is information.
Well, do you see that the apparent locomotive that President Bush is charging down the track towards war with Iraq can be stopped by people standing in the way, such as the proposed future peace marches and past ones? Do you believe that will make a difference?
I want to believe it will make a difference. I would never stop believing that protesting would make a difference. I'm in favor up until the last moment of protesting this war. And I think it's actually extraordinary that we have such a powerful anti-war movement before the war has even begun.
Are you participating in it? Will you be attending the peace marches?
I'm going to be participating in some way. And a lot of friends of mine are very involved. Jody Evans, a very good friend of mine, who just came back with a lot of other women from Iraq, actually is going to be having a meeting at my home tomorrow, and I will be there too. So, yes, I'm very connected with a lot of the people protesting the war. I'm very much with them, and I believe that it's kind of tragic the way this administration is moving headlong without the support of NATO. That's another promising development today, that NATO is not going along. I love to see people standing up to the bullies in the White House.
Ariana, do you see any promise or hope in any good politicians that are out there? Can you name any?
Absolutely. There are good politicians.
For instance?
Two of them actually have endorsed my book. We have quotes on the back cover. That must make them good, right?
Is that the requirement to make them good?
Yes. John McCain is somebody I deeply admire, who stood up to the system, who galvanized young people in the 2000 election. John Kerry, somebody with a great record on environmental issues. Dennis Kucinich, the congressman from Cleveland. There are absolutely politicians who are trying to fight the tide in Washington. My general point is that it's still much more promising to look to the people to bring about changes and to fill the leadership vacuum.
Ariana, you've got a wealth of information on your website, on your columns, in your books, on your radio programs. Do you do the research yourself, or do you have a squad that does it for you?
Not a squad, but I have a fabulous research assistant who is both brilliant and committed to the same issues I'm committed. So he is on LexisNexis or the net all the time, and he finds things, he fact-checks my columns. And both he and I are in touch with a lot of the groups that I mention at the end of the book that are doing a lot of the research about these issues, like the Center for Responsive Politics, that tracks the influence of lobbying and campaign contributions on public policy, or Common Cause, or public campaign. So absolutely, part of where my information is coming from is these think tanks, these groups that are working way beyond what journalists are doing.
In your background, I know that you were involved with a guru named John Roger. You were married to a congressman. You were educated at Cambridge. Was there a gradual evolution to bring you to the point where you are now, or was there a catharsis along the way or an epiphany?
It was definitely a gradual evolution in my political thinking. My interests and my concerns have always been the same. Ever since I wrote a book about the crisis in political leadership in my 20s, I was concerned about these huge inequalities and disparities and the lack of leadership. And I've always been a social moderate on issues like choice or gay rights or gun control. So the change has been in my view of government. I used to believe that the private sector would step up to the plate and provide a lot of the resources, both financial and time, to solve many of our social problems. And then I saw firsthand that this wasn't happening and that we needed the raw power of government appropriations to solve a lot of the social problems. Also, I saw in researching this book and in writing columns about corporate abuses the need for a free market that's regulated. Because if we leave the market unregulated, it is really very hard to control the kind of abuses that have been happening in the 90s and continue today.
Who would do the regulation?
Well, of course, it has to be the government.
But then again, that brings us back to where we started. We have the government run by the special interests who would want to regulate to meet their needs.
Well, that's why we need independent watchdogs, like the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, needs to be independent. It's not at the moment. They're constantly being influenced by lobbying campaigns. And that's why we need to reinstate a lot of the legislative controls that were set in place during the New Deal and were dismantled in the 90s.
Looking at the Constitution and the fundamental basis, the way our government is set up, would you make any specific changes?
No, I don't think the changes that we need are changes to the Constitution. First of all, they are changes to what we're accepting as the norm and what we're accepting as legal. And there are changes in our public policy priorities. I mean, at a time of soaring unemployment and crumbling public schools and 43 million people without health insurance, it seems insane to me to look at the president's budget and see what his priorities are. Accelerating tax cuts for the wealthy and tax cuts on dividends. I mean, surely this is not a budget for one nation. It's the budget for the upstairs America that I write about in the book.
Well, Arianna Huffington, author of Pigs at the Trough, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious. And before we close, I'd like to ask you to tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately.
Well, I've just finished a very interesting book written by Bill Gates Sr., Bill Gates' father, and Chuck Collins. Chuck Collins was the founder of a group called Responsible Wealth. And it's an amazing book because it takes on the administration's attempt to repeal the estate tax. And what makes it fascinating is that this is a man, Bill Gates Sr., whose personal interest would be to repeal the estate tax. But he, together with other billionaires and millionaires, have come together in what Newsweek termed the billionaire backlash to question the timing and the sanity of repealing the estate tax just when our deficits are soaring and just when we really need to do whatever we can for the people left out of the good times of the 90s.
And what's the name of the book by Gates and Collins?
You know what? I don't remember the exact title, but it is on the estate tax.
Arianna Huffington, thanks very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
Thank you very much.
Arianna Huffington is the author of Pigs at the Trough, How Corporate Greed and Political Corruption Are Undermining America, published by Crown Books. The book that she recommends was recently written by Bill Gates Sr. and Chuck Collins, entitled Wealth and Our Commonwealth, Why America Should Tax Accumulated Fortunes. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious are available for $10 each. I'll give you the address in just a moment. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your cards, letters, ideas, and suggestions for future programs. And here's the address. Radio Curious, Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541. And the email is curious@pacific.net. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Stay curious, be creative, and join us again next week.